Yeah. We were chapter 6. And we were discussing last time in chapter 6 the common evil seen among men. That was that a lot of men live their lives without any enjoyment. And we've seen multiple occasions already, this is the one recommendation the preacher does make, is that to enjoy the good that we have, enjoy the wealth and prosperity that God's given us, eat, drink, and be merry. And yet, we've seen this common evil that many men don't practice this. And we were looking at just, you know, why that is. And it's a matter of not that they don't have the good things, they don't possess something that prevents them from enjoying it. It's that their attitude in life. we talked about it is that they weren't satisfied. They were bound with a wandering desire, discontent. And see, I was going to ask, how would you label this attitude of life? Or I guess the root of why they are not satisfied.
Out of focus.
Mixed up priorities.
Be happy with
dissatisfaction.
Yes, materialism, sorry?
Dissatisfaction.
Yeah, dissatisfaction, materialism is what is the root of their dissatisfaction. Yeah, greed or avarice. I had all of those, but covetousness. And I defined in my lesson, I looked up covetousness, which is, in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, is an intense, selfish desire for wealth or possessions, or a painful awareness of others' possessions and desire to possess them as well. And it doesn't say that this person doesn't possess, this person doesn't have a lot of things. It's their focus, as Mr. Porfer mentioned, their focus is on what everyone else has, focus on what they don't have. They yearn and crave for something more, they ache for something more. And that attitude consumes them, becomes, their entire focus is on that craving what they don't have. And because of that, they're not able to enjoy what they do have. And based on the scriptures we've already read, the three different cases, the man with wealth but it was taken away, or the man with with a lot of family, or long life, we see that, a man with this attitude, he won't find enjoyment, even if he does attain, great wealth or any kind of prosperity. He has something to enjoy, family to enjoy, even if he has a long life. It's not a matter of something, the happiness isn't something that he must attain before he can achieve it. It's not something that to be attained by possessing more things. Of course, we discussed in Ecclesiastes 5:10. He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver. Or he who loves abundance with increase. It's that same thought. It's not a matter of, if you're focused on getting more, it's not going to bring you happiness. Attaining that more isn't what's going to do it for you. It's the attitude. Well, and I'm talking about stuff. So how do you avoid this life? How do you avoid this attitude that leads to this lack of enjoyment in life? When we read verse 8 and 9, "For what more has the wise man than the fool? Or what does the poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind." So what do the wise man and the poor man have? That's of note.
They have what's before them, what they can see.
Yeah. Well, everyone has something before them, right? But specifically, they see it, correct?
They have the blessings that they have. You have what God's given you while you're here. You have to realize those.
Yeah, it's the realization
of pride. And that's what you have, what's given to you.
Exactly. Everyone has something before them, But these men here, you look at it, they have the knowledge to enjoy what they have. It's the wise man has wisdom, and so does the poor man. The poor man knows how to... in verse 8, the poor man who knows how to walk before the living. So here he has a knowledge of how to live his life. And the wise man has a knowledge. And they apply it. They know, they have this realization that what is before them, what they can see, is what they can enjoy.
Sometimes people that's all they think about is rich. We're never going to be happy because they're wise. They think of wisdom. They're going to get more and more and more. And that's going to make them happy in the future because they never will. It's their demise many times.
Yeah, it's not the attainment of wisdom. Here we're talking about the knowledge, the realization of what they have before them is what they can enjoy. But they're not the focus for something else. It's the focus of, I got to get what I don't have. And so, you know, it's better is the sight of the eyes than desire. So, you know, the wandering desire, here it's a matter of contentment, right? To be content with what you do have. We know in 1 Timothy 6:8, we see that same thought in the New Testament. And we've been here before. And again, in 1 Timothy 6, chapter 6, verse 8. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. You know, it's a matter of, you know, here, you know, controlling that desire. Certainly everyone does want more. Maybe I'm just going to say, I want more. But it's not my focus. It's, you know, if I can get more, fine. But you enjoy what you have. You don't let it ruin the enjoyment you can possess now. Enjoy what you have. So, based on this, can the poor enjoy life?
Yeah.
Yes, they can. They can. We see that in this verse, where the poor man who knew how to live life, he knew how to live it. Yes, he can enjoy life, if he has the proper attitude. And of course, it all comes down to the attitude. Whether rich or poor, if you have the wrong attitude, you won't enjoy life. You know, this attitude of covetousness isn't something that only consumes the rich. It consumes the poor as well. You know, it's just this desire for what you don't have. And I think a lot of times you start thinking of covetousness, oh, those people who have so much and they just want more and more and more. You know, and you maybe forget about the poor people who have that same attitude, but you overlook it because they don't have a lot. They have, you know, very little. But they still consume, they get, you know, bitter, they don't have any enjoyment of what they do possess. And certainly, you know, poor man can possess a family that he can enjoy. We see here, we talk about the, you know, what one sees, the sight of one's eyes. You know, that includes your family, that includes, you know, the wonders of nature all around us. You know, we go on holiday to different places, and we usually go to places that are pretty, right? Let's go to the Smoky Mountains, you know, and see the wonder of it all. And of course, you know, food, as long as the poor man's living, he must be eating something. It may not be what the rich man's eating, but still it can be something that's enjoyed. And so there's enjoyment to be found in any life, but it only if... Only if you have the proper attitude. So the requirement to enjoy life is what?
Enjoy the blessings we have.
Yeah, enjoy the blessings we have. You know, with knowledge, apply the proper attitude to our hearts, apply the proper focus and priority in life. And of course, you know, of course, we know that even with this proper attitude, we know the things we possess are still vain, right? They're still futile. We have enjoyment, we have satisfaction, and yet we only have it for a little while. It's still fleeting. But the important part to remember is desire and covetousness is more vain. It's futile in the extreme because you can't. Some things, you know, if you focus on that, focus on what you can't get, there's always going to be something you can't get. And you just ruin what enjoyment you could have. Any comments on that? Additions?
is a big contrast to what our country's looking at. You know, you can't be happy unless everybody's got things and stuff, and so we want to fix that, we want to change that. And now through the book, as you pointed out, there's a certain amount of contentment under the sun, working for what you have, and you know, a full day's work, and you get the rest, but you know, you can't do it that way, trying to make everybody do what this is. Do what they ought to do, and we'll fix it. Our the government's going to fix it.
Yeah.
It's man's wisdom versus God's wisdom.
Yeah. It's just contentment's the proper attitude we need. And also, just your comment made me think about it. You know, a lot of times someone might say they're content, might really be content. And we come into, you know, difficult times and adverse times like now. You know, you say you have this quality of life which a man was content. And he wasn't desiring more and coveting more, but suddenly, due to circumstances outside your control, you take a move back in your quality of life. You know, that does affect people. If you're truly content, you'd still be content with your new means, even though they were less. And not everyone, I mean, that's, you know, that is a hard step back. That's what a lot of people, that's what people in our country are facing now. We need to remember, yes?
Like, I was thinking along those same lines, too. I was also thinking about, even when it's not hard times, you know, the way our society is, we live on a lot of borrowed stuff. And we set a standard of living that's higher than maybe what we can afford. And, you know, that we may think, well, we're content with what we have, but really we're working harder and harder so we can keep what we have instead of, you know, living at a level which we can afford and be happy with. It's like we need that extra or whatever that we can't afford.
Yeah. Just be content with what we have. Don't let the maintaining of what you do have ruin the enjoyment of it. And so we come to the end of chapter 6. I label this section, I label this the reality of the situation. Verse 10 through 12. It says, whatever one is, he has been named already. For it is known that he is man, and he cannot contend with him who is mightier than he. Since there are many things that increase vanity, how is man the better? For who knows what is good for man in life, all the days of his vain life which he passes like a shadow? Who can tell a man what will happen to him after him under the sun? And so, you know, we look at the beginning of this, you know, what a man is. He's been labeled as man. And you look at this, and I see it as the limitations of the nature of man. We know what man is. Man is man. You know, we know in Genesis 3:19. In 3:19, when God, you know, puts the curse on man, in the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground. For out of it you are taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return. Man is a man, he's made of dust. Even this verse, you know, it talks about, I think in verse 12, the end of it, that he passes like a shadow. Life is fleeting, life is short. In Psalms 39:5, we see the same idea. It says, indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, my age is nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best is... at its best state is but vapor. And of course, the idea of, you know, like as a breath, you take a breath of a moment and then it's gone. And of course, we're limited in knowledge and wisdom. And we've read that before in Ecclesiastes 3, talking about the limitations of man, that we don't get to know everything. And also, we see this in verse 12, the very end of chapter 6 here. that we don't know what comes after us. We don't know everything. This is the reality and the state of man. And we've seen this, see here in verse 10, that man wants to contend with this. We've been given a recommendation of how to live life, to enjoy what we have. Everything is vain, everything is futile, but you have the opportunity to enjoy what you have. And yet it's like as if we're not satisfied with that, or it's not a good enough answer. And so, can shall man contend with the reality we're in? Can, and thus, you know, God put us in this position, made us this way. If you're contending with the reality situation, you're contending with God. Can man contend with God?
You can try.
Yeah. Even if you didn't have, you know, we know that God placed reality in. But even if this is just reality, we ignore God. How do you contend with the reality of the situation you find yourself?
You're frustrated.
It is what it is, right?
Exactly.
And, but we know God's behind everything, and yeah, man cannot contend with the way things are. The way things are is the way they are. And you see here that man wants to know what is better, what is profitable. And the end of verse 11, how is man the better? We see many words, my scripture says, since there are many things that increase vanity. I think other translations say there are many words that increase vanity. But how is man the better? We can talk about it, we can discuss it, but there is no answer to how is man the better except what we have to enjoy, even though it's fleeting, it's temporary. We still want to know what's profitable, and we want to contend against God and against the nature of life, the nature of the situation we find ourselves. I want to turn to Isaiah 45. Isaiah 45, verse 9. A few verses just to strike on this thought. It's, woe to him who strives with his maker. Let the potsherd strive with the potsherds of the earth. Shall the clay say to him who forms it, what are you making? Or shall your handiwork say, he has no hands? And of course, here it's, you know, given that thought, we know God made, God is the maker, God's made the way things are. But you take the analogy of, as you know, of men's works. If I made, you know, a pot shirt, you know, made a pot of from clay, is the clay going to tell me, you didn't make me, you don't have any hands to that form me? Of course, it's given out the whole sense of complete and utter foolishness, right? How is the thing that is made to tell the maker that you didn't, you know, you didn't make me? In Romans 9:20, the same. Romans 9:20, but indeed, O man, who are you to reply against God? Will the thing formed say to him who formed it, why have you made me like this? And, of course, this is, you know, a greater level of respect to God we have to, you know, be careful of, but, yeah, we're reading this book and looking at how is man profitable under the sun. We find that any profit is always short and temporary. And a lot of men, a lot of people, that just doesn't seem right. I don't like it. And we strive against it. We rail against the way things are. And, you know, that's to rail against God. And, of course, it's not going to change anything. God is the Creator. He's mightier than us. He's made everything the way it is. And, of course, to question the reality of the situation, the futility we have, you know, is anything going to be changed by questioning it?
Other than your contentment here, this is not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to change anything about the situation except perhaps your own situation. You'll make it worse. You'll increase the futility. You know, asking futile questions leads in, you know, in further futility. Frustration, sorrow. It's not going to improve your lot. It's certainly not going to bring you any further enjoyment. And that's the recommendation we have. That's the end of chapter 6.
I was just thinking your thoughts were just staying, fit in with that, what you said about limitations. That's a lot of man's problems. He doesn't want to acknowledge or realize that we do have the limitations because of God. God set that in motion. God put this plan in motion. And He's in control. But man doesn't want to accept that. You know, God said, no, that, no, we don't want to be limited. We want to be do everything on our own. We want to, you know, this independent nation, all that. You know. It is to an extent, but God put these things in motion. We want to give Him thanksgiving. We want to give Him praise. We want to give Him honor. So we're going to do things our way, and it leads you. You see, we're a sled, our country, and then to meet ourselves, not having that realization that we are limited. Limited in what we can do and how it
God. Yeah. Rocky?
Mike, here is chapter 6. There's a kind of, as we've gone through this, all these different verses, it appears to me to be a real striking lesson here that to really kind of hit me kind of close to home. It's back in verse 1, where we begin with the chapter. It says, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun. It was talking about the enjoyment of life. And it says, and it is prevailing among men. And play it. Kind of strikes me kind of this lesson here about prevailing. You know, that means it's very, very common. It's kind of the status quo. When you think about it, that's almost opposite of what you would think would happen. You think that people would want to enjoy things, enjoy the blessings they receive from God, but evidently that's not the way it is in society. And when Solomon wrote this thing, evidently it was true then, it was true today. And I think for us, as we look at this, and for me, is that we as children of God can fall in the same trap. We can be in a situation where we don't enjoy the things that God has given us. And I when I look at, you know, all the gifts that God's given us, specifically, you know, we have a mate, we have family, we have physical blessings, we have a job, we have our health, and we're to enjoy all that. And I think we can, as Christians, can fall in the trap of not taking advantage of it. And I think it's something that we just got to be very, very careful about. It's just an observation there that you see this evil, but it's common. It's opposite of what you think.
Yeah, it's very common. You know, I guess it's this fact. We see the enjoyment has some limited profit, and we see the same thing. What's happening is man is contending against that realization. We want to find something more profitable. Or, you know, a lot of times that's what people are doing. I can find something better, so I'm going to do this, and I do that. And man goes in all these different directions and doesn't enjoy life, and he's worse off because of it.
We've always been that way, excuse me, since the very beginning. Eve saw that the apple looked good, would make her wise, and she had everything. I mean, God had created the perfect situation for Adam and Eve, but she still was interested in more.
Yeah, she was deceived in that instance. I was going to make another point. What did you say, Rocky? But I'm losing it.
One comment is, you list a reason why this doesn't happen. I think another reason we have to list is we're not good stewards of things we have. The blessings that we do have, being good stewards of all these things. A person who maybe have a really good job, but does not take care of his physical possessions, his financial situation, get himself in a bad situation where he has to work harder or get another job.
Yeah.
Be good stewards of things that God's given us.
I remember it now, what I said. This, of course, remembering the focus of what we're talking about here was this is just in a life purely under the sun. And you know, you made reference that, yeah, we can fall into this trap as Christians. And it's true, we can. But, of course, when we move out as Christians, our focus is not only of life under the sun. We have to step back and look at the bigger picture. And know we you know, the service we do to God, hopefully, is be enjoyable, but not all things are. But that does have a reward outside of this life under the sun. And, you know, we want to apply this in our lives, but we don't want to make, you know, wrap this up as this is everything, because remember, this is that focus we're looking at, purely under the sun. We still, as Christians, have God, have eternal life, and there's things we're going to do, responsibilities to God that are outside of the text of this book. just, you know, to bring us back to the full magnitude of the situation, and not to confuse, you know, what we're stating here. Okay?
Well, Michael, I understand what you're talking about, but I think, you know, and I think you agree with this too, that Solomon is kind of putting God as an object of life under the sun, because the question he poses in the end of the first part of verse 12, who knows what is good for him in his lifetime? Well, God knows what's good. And that's all the things he's given us we should enjoy. And when we don't, it's kind of like saying we're thankless towards God. You know, we have to have, we don't appreciate what he's given us, and we don't appreciate, you know, what we have until we keep on striving for more and more. It's like being thankless.
Yeah.
Pointing back to what Jim was saying.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly true. And we know that we've seen this, you know, we've read before when we're talking about the enjoyment we have from in life. It is a gift from God. God does want us to enjoy life. But, you know, of course, that isn't to be our sole focus in life. You know, and here under the sun, that's all we have. Okay, yeah, that should be our focus, is enjoyment. But, you know, what point I was making was, yeah, in respect to eternal life, then our sole focus isn't just enjoyment. Of course, our focus becomes a little bit more on, you know, serving God and attaining that. But yeah, God does want us to enjoy life. He's given us these things to enjoy, and we need to take advantage of them. Is there any other comments? So I was going to review a little bit, because chapter 6 is the end of the observations of life section in Ecclesiastes. And beginning chapter 7 and forward, we're going to be talking about an application of wisdom in life. How can we make our way through life, knowing all the things we've just discussed? You know, you'll be focused on what application can we make, one of which is, you know, enjoyment in life, but other things that we can do to make ourselves improve our situation. You know, they're not profitable, but we can improve our situation. But when we look back at all the things, what are some of all the things the observations that the preacher has made? What have we seen discussed so far? Such as, how was futility demonstrated when he first began the chapter? How did he demonstrate the futility of life? The vanity we have and life under the sun. Yeah, we all die.
Everything's kind of a continuous cycle, never changing. No matter what we try to do or expect, it's always been like that again.
Everything's on a never-ending cycle. That's exactly right. And he shows that through what we've done, through, you know, what man has done. We live, we die, we have generations. It keeps going and going and going. The things we do are always the same things. And also in nature itself, we saw examples of that. Never-ending cycles. The sun goes round and round. The wind continues its circuit, as does the water process cycle. You know, everything ends up where it began. There's no true result made, no progress shown. Everything just goes right back to where it was. And all things, if there's any progress, it's the fact that life just continues. But nothing else goes on. Nothing else is shown from it. And also, you know, of course, the author is making these recommendations. He's analyzing all this. Why did we come to the conclusion that he's qualified to make these recommendations to us? Of course, we all know who is the author of the book?
Solomon.
Yeah, Solomon. And why is he qualified?
Because
of his wisdom. Why did he?
Well, he set out for his life to investigate these things, and he's given it all his resources to find the limits of this, you know, testing the question.
Yeah, he's using, he's making application of that wisdom. The wisdom is in part inspired by God. He had greater wisdom than all before him, and he's making application, made it his focus to study these things. Did anyone else say anything else?
He's also very wealthy, and he's a king, so he has much authority.
Yes, he has great wealth, and he has the power and authority being the king. But no one's going to tell him what he can or can't do, so he can make... He can choose his path and whatever he wants, and there's no one to stop him. So the choices he makes, you know, he's without restrictions on earth within his kingdom. And he has the wealth to carry things out and the wisdom to carry things out. And so he's qualified to make, you know, the statements and perform this analysis and come to reasonable conclusions.
It's ironic that Solomon, and as we know, if you look back, made the wrong decisions outside the scope of his limitations. And it cost him. It cost him dearly. You know, he didn't do what God says, don't marry the form wise. He did that, and it cost him. Because he got outside that, what we're talking about, that limitations. You know, this was God. He was setting this for you. And he was blessed with so much as we've all stated. And yet he didn't follow that.
Yeah, he didn't follow some of the commandments of God. Mm-hmm. And that cost him with respect to God.
Option, but it's might got me thinking about it.
Yeah, that's going to, that's, I think, I don't know, that probably is, under his life under the sun, that, you know, is sort of outside that reach to some extent. Of course, that does affect his life here on earth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this situation he got himself in. But, I mean, it doesn't disqualify everything he says. It doesn't disqualify the wisdom he had that he's demonstrated.
Well, Mike, along with what we've been talking about, and how he's the most qualified, is because he talks about all the experiences he has, which go along with him having so much wealth and him being at the king and power, like all the wives he had and all the slaves and stuff. He's the wisest man, yeah, maybe he should have followed his own advice, but he has the experience of having made those mistakes.
Yeah, a lot of times we learn from our mistakes. It's a really good way to learn from them. It's one of the best ways to learn is to make mistakes. Not that we want to make them. And so, I guess, what are some of the ways he's tested to find profit in on earth? He didn't just pop these into his head and said, blah, blah, blah. None of these things are profitable. He put these things to the test, right? Rock mentioned, pointed out the in-depth study he went to analyze everything. What are some of the things he analyzed?
Riches.
He built houses and parks and gardens and vineyards and saw that all of these did not bring him what he wanted.
Yeah, he labored, he possessed much, he built much, he had, you know, great wealth, he had all these, you know, things that could bring him pleasure, you know, and he analyzed it and found, you know, what the meaning of pleasure was, you know, it's good to have, but ultimately it's, you know, it's of the moment, and then it passes away. You know, he tested pleasure and mirth, he tested to possess and to the labor he made, and of course, what was one of the other, I guess, why was to possess these things not profitable?
Annihilate it to somebody,
and
you know what
they did with it. Yeah, he builds this great, all this stuff, and then he's just going to leave it to somebody else. And they may be wise or foolish and just dispatch of everything he had. He tested wisdom and folly, and why did he come to the conclusion that those weren't profitable? Yeah, we both die. Both the wise and the fool both die the same way. You know, it's not that one dies a little better off than the other. They both die and then it's over. Of course, we do read later, he went to, you know, makes mention that wisdom is better than folly. Yeah, it's better than foolishness. But, you know, in its ultimate state, it is still vanity. It's fleeting. Why was it that wisdom was better? That he could, this verse specifically said he could see, right? He knew the path he was walking, versus the fool was in darkness. He, you know, you could analyze the situation and improve your lot here in life by choosing a correct path, or the more, you know, something would bring more enjoyment or you know, any all these temporary vain things, but you can, you know, better yourself off here on earth with wisdom versus folly. The fool falls into many troubles, you know, because he doesn't lead himself properly. walking around in darkness, you fall into the pit. You're going to fall into all sorts of difficulties without wisdom. And what did Ecclesiastes mean? Yeah, the preacher. When he gathers the assembly. And of course we all know what the question of this book was. The in-depth analysis he took was to answer which question? If there was any prophet under the sun. And what was the answer?
All is vanity.
Yeah, all is vanity. There isn't any real prophet. It's all vain. It's all futile. Anything, you can gain stuff, but it's a short duration. Anyone else have any thoughts on the matter? Unless you want to start on chapter 7 already. You just got it. Mr. Fontenay, you got no comments? Quiet as a mouse today.
One comment, Mike, on this outline. I know you have a suggestion outline. The second part of the outline, I think we had observations of life. Chapter 6.
Yes.
And I guess definitely that's it. I think I added to that to help me focus in on some another message. I have the vanity of all earthly endeavors. To me, it gets more to the point. It's truly observations of life, and there's a message there.
He observes everything in life, and everything in life is vanity. I have that written down verbatim, so I don't know. I must have either wrote that, probably mentioned that, and I wrote it down. But yeah, the observations of life, and certainly these observations lead us to the conclusion that, you know, in all things, vanity is seen. About anything that, I guess, a different interpretation of anything we've covered so far?